Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
We're back for another edition of Drive Time Sports. Right here on KOAL 107.3 FM. And 7:50 a.m., I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini, set to do it again, middle of the week, Wednesday, and we are counting down the minutes to the NBA trade deadline. Already had a couple of moves to report. Last night, the Philadelphia 76ers, they strike gold once again. We might as well begin there. When the 76ers announced that Elton Brand was going to be their next general manager, I didn't really know, why Elton Brand? Where did that come from? But Elton Brand has gone all in. And if you're a 76er fan, their second trade of the regular season last night was a big one. They acquired Tobias Harris from the Clippers, and now he can join an already loaded solid five. Joel Embiid, Jimmy Butler, Ben Simmons. I mean, this is a fantastic starting five now for the 76ers. In exchange, the Clippers get a bounty of future picks over the next few years, including the ones that Philadelphia got from Detroit to Miami. So if you really thought the Sixers were going all in with the Jimmy Butler trade or didn't think they were going all in, they most certainly are now. And really, they are crazy versatile now defensively. Now they need to add some depth. But this starting five, again, I absolutely love it. Joel Embiid, Tobias Harris in your front court. You go ahead and you tie that up with Ben Simmons and Jimmy Butler. I like it. I mean, this is defensively, this team is going to be just so much fun to watch. And I think when you look at it on paper, they fit well together. And I think that there's some uncertainty for the future. But at the same time, Elton Brand is playing for the now, and I think that's the way to go. You take a look at Philadelphia, they may very well be the strongest team in the Eastern Conference. I think you can make that case. And as where we sit right now, as we sit here today, I think you could have made the case for Philadelphia being a problem for teams in the in the Eastern Conference playoffs. But without Victor Oladipo in Indiana, Philadelphia is going to jump them. They are better than Indiana. Boston, to me, is still a team you got to watch out for. I think they will figure it out. They may make a move within the next 16, 17 hours. Toronto, yeah, they have one of the best two-way players in the game in Kawhi Leonard. I don't think that this current roster for Toronto is enough to come out of the East. I don't. Could be wrong, but I don't. I think the Raptors need to make a move. And then you have Milwaukee. In my mind, Philadelphia, they have the best starting five of the Eastern Conference. I think this is a huge, huge deal. And again, I tip my hat to Elton Brand. In today's world, everyone is obsessed with the future. We got to build a young core. We're going to let that core morph together. It doesn't work that way. It really doesn't. I mean, you can build off of fundamental, you can build off key pieces, I guess. You have your foundation of one or two guys, but if you're going to try to build an entire core together, it doesn't work that way. And in today's world of free agency in the NBA, where the max contract is 5 years, that's the max length of a contract, it's even more difficult with player ops and everything else that you have. I just don't necessarily think that the future is something I would look at if I'm a general manager. And Elton Brand obviously feels the same way because he has given up a lot of assets to bring in what may be just the best starting five in the Eastern Conference. If you're a Sixers fan today, you better be ecstatic. Speaking of some of the other deals that have gone down in the NBA, the Miami Heat have agreed to trade Tyler Johnson and Wayne Ellington to Phoenix for Ryan Anderson. Now, according to ESPN, Phoenix will waive Ellington. That'll allow him to join a playoff contender. He hasn't played terrible this year. He's just above 9 or 8 points per game. Johnson is averaging 10.8 points, 2.5 assists, 2.8 rebounds. This is one of those trades. You look at it on paper, you say it's a trade just to make a trade. The tax bill of Miami is why this trade was made. It's going to drop from $9.7 million to $1.7 million. And that figure could drop even further if Kelly Olynyk misses out on his $1 million bonus for playing 1,700 minutes. He's not on pace to do that either. So it's a financial move for Miami. They're going to create a $6.2 million trade exception with the trade, which Ellington has to approve. But Anderson has a cap hit of $20.4 million this season and $21.3 next season, of which $15 million is guaranteed. It's all financial. I find the financial aspect of trades very interesting. I don't know that everyone else does, though, so I'm not going to bore you with the financial numbers. To me, that kind of stuff is absolutely fascinating stuff. That is a cap trade. Now, there were other deals, but none that involve Anthony Davis, and that's the biggest name to watch between now and the deadline tomorrow. According to reports, the Lakers are still waiting to hear back from the Pelicans. This right here tells me that New Orleans is at least entertaining the idea of shipping him to L.A., because Anthony Davis will not play for the Pelicans until after the trade deadline, even though he has been cleared. That tells me that New Orleans is at least considering this offer from LA, God's father offer. They have less than a day to decide if they want to accept it or not. I think it's in everyone's best interest if they just accept it, including the Lakers. Boy, that was terrible last night. Worst loss of LeBron James' career. 42-point setback on the road against the Victor Oladipo-less Indiana Pacers. That's embarrassing. Take a look at another trade that has gone down. The Detroit Pistons will move on from Stanley Johnson. They have sent him to Milwaukee for Thon Maker. Again, ESPN reported this earlier today. The deal involving really two former lottery picks. I guess it's a fresh start for each individual player. Giannis Antetokounmpo was not happy with Milwaukee moving on from Thon Maker. I don't know how old Maker is. I do know that Johnson is 22 and he's averaging just over 7 points per game, and he's been in the NBA now for over three seasons. He was the eighth overall pick back in 2015. He's going to give the Bucks, who have the best record in the NBA. If you're not keeping track at home, the Milwaukee Bucks have the best record in the NBA. It's another wing defender, and that's how the Bucks are going to have to play moving forward into the postseason. They need another wing defender. Maker, you know, again, I don't know how old this guy is. I really don't. I think he's peaked. He's due for a rookie contract extension this offseason. He's shown at times he has shown some promise. But as far as the Bucks rotation goes, there's just really no place for him to bloom, to blossom. So this makes sense, I think, on all avenues. Maker can now go to Detroit. Detroit trying to start fresh themselves. Bring in Thon Maker, see what you have there. On the flip side, Stanley Johnson gives Milwaukee another perimeter defender. This trade actually took place after the deal that brought Tobias Harris to Philadelphia. Tobias Harris, former Pistons player as well. So I don't know if it was one of those deals where the Bucks said, we need to get better on the wing. I know there were rumors about Thon Maker for the last couple of weeks, but now it is official. Thon Maker is on his way to Detroit, and again, Stanley Johnson coming back to the Bucks. So that's a couple of the big moves. I know people in Utah are keeping a close eye on Mike Conley. I still think Mike Conley's coming to the Jazz. I don't know that there's going to be a better offer out there. I know the Grizzlies want multiple first-round picks, but with 2 years, $67 million left on his contract, I don't know that that's necessarily going to happen. I think the Jazz are going to end up getting Mike Conley between now and tomorrow. That would just be my personal prediction. We'll see if that actually comes to fruition. We'll take a look at some of the other headlines in the national sports scene. And with football being over, there's really not a lot. It's NBA because we can't even talk Major League Baseball yet. We don't even have that to talk about. So for the most part, it is all about the National Basketball Association at the moment. Major League Baseball is proposing some new rule changes. That's always interesting to talk about. Old man baseball. I guess I fall in line with that. I'd say just leave it the way it is, but we'll go over some of those rule changes a little bit later, potential rule changes a little bit later on in the show. Why not? Let's stick with the NBA. We'll take a look at the schedule today. There's a full slate of games, and they begin at the 5 o'clock hour. The Denver Nuggets will travel on the road to meet the Brooklyn Nets. Start time for that game is set for 5:30. We get New Orleans at Chicago at 6 p.m., and then Washington will take on the Milwaukee Bucks also at 6. Tonight, 6:30, Charlotte on the road to take on the Dallas Mavericks. The Jazz play host to Phoenix at 7 p.m. That game will not air tonight on KOAL. We have Emory High School basketball final true road game of the year for the Spartans. I'll talk more about that in just a moment. 8 o'clock hour tonight, we get Houston at Sacramento, and then in the nightcap, San Antonio travels to meet the Golden State Warriors at 8:30. A lot coming up on the show from the local sports front. I'm going to give you the rundown in just a moment. And like I said, tonight, the Emory Spartans on the road taking on the Grand Red Devils. Live coverage of that game will begin at 6:30 p.m., but we'll get you set up for it in just a moment. Coach Todd Jeffs is going to join us over the phone. We'll talk some Major League Baseball and more NBA basketball. It's all coming up straight ahead right here on this Wednesday edition of Drive Time Sports, KOAO 107.3 FM and 7:50 a.m. Reporting from the KOAL newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. And we will begin with high school basketball, where last night the Emory Lady Spartans rolled past the Grand Red Devils on senior night by a final score of 106-34. Emory outscored Grand 31-6 in the opening quarter. They had a 24 in the next two quarters and closed out on a 27-12 run to pick up the lopsided victory. In their final home game in a Spartan uniform, Kinley Toomer scored 24 points, knocking down three shots from beyond the arc. Megan Jensen chipped in with 23. Morgan Herdsman finished with 18. And Caitlin Toomer scored 18. Ambry Bennett also reached double figures. She scored 10. The win moves Emory to 11-0 in region play, and with only one game remaining on the regular season slate, Emory will wrap up the regular season tomorrow on the road against the San Juan Broncos. Start time for that contest is set for 6 p.m. Emory has already clinched the Region 15 championship. Now we stick with high school basketball, but we move over to the Emory boys side. Tonight, the Spartans will look for their second consecutive win as they travel on the road to meet the Grand Red Devils. Start time for tonight's contest is set for 7 p.m. It will mark the second and final meeting of the season between the two squads. Emory won the first at the Spartan Center back on January 16th by a final score of 81-70. You can listen to the live coverage of tonight's game, which will begin at 6:30 p.m. with the Landon's Diesel Service pregame show. Tip-off will follow shortly after at 7. That'll be on KOAL 107.3 FM, 7:50 a.m., and also CastleCountryRadio.com. For this past weekend, both Carbon and Emory participated in the divisional tournament to qualify for the state championship meet on February 15th and 16th. The Spartans took a total of 22 wrestlers to Richfield to participate in the divisional tournament. And while Byron Christiansen and Gus Dalton both took first in their weight division, the Spartans qualified a total of 19 wrestlers. Again, Christiansen was fantastic for the Spartans, taking home the first place nod at the 106-pound division, topping teammate Jess Christiansen, who finished in second. The Spartans also got a dominating performance by Gus Dalton, who has been pegged as one of the top 160-pound wrestlers all season long. Again, the Spartans had 19 total wrestlers qualify for the state tournament. That includes second-place finishes from Corby Christiansen, Chase Christiansen, and also a top three performance by McKay Macarello and Briar Macarello, as well as Hayes Dalton. Now we stick with high school wrestling, but we move over to Carbon, and the Dinos qualified 15 wrestlers for the state tournament, which again will take place February 15th and 16th. The lead man for Carbon was Connor Fawcett. He took second place in the 145-pound division, while Bryce Judd placed third at 126 pounds, and Bobby Blake also placed third at 138 pounds. As a team, Carbon placed sixth overall, and again bringing in 15 qualifiers for state, as well as two alternates. Like Emory, you can get the complete results from the divisional round by visiting CastleCountryRadio.com. We end by moving over to junior college athletics, and the USU Eastern men's basketball team received votes as far as the top 25 national poll is concerned. USU Eastern is coming off of a big one-point victory over the Snow College Badgers. USU Eastern is 16-8 overall this season, but has scored victories over Salt Lake, CSI, and now Snow College, while also defeating Colorado, which means they've scored wins over every conference opponent. On the outside, looking into the top 25 right now is Snow College and Salt Lake. USU Eastern did receive one vote, which puts them on the outside of the top 25 looking in, but it marks a milestone for a team that has showed vast improvement. As it sits right now, Southern Idaho, CSI, a squad that USU Eastern did beat on their home court, is ranked 13th. USU Eastern will go toe-to-toe with CSI this Thursday on the road in Twin Falls. You can find more news, sports, and community events at CastleCountryRadio.com. Reporting from the KOAL newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
What you listening to?
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss things.
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
Coach's Corner, the Wednesday edition of Drive Time Sports. Coming up tonight right here on KOAL, 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM, the Emory Spartans traveling on the road to take on the Grand Red Devils. Final road game of the 2018-2019 season. Final true road game, I should say. State tournament next week and then the week after. But Emory's in a difficult spot right now. As far as the region championship goes, that's out of reach, but they can't climb as high as number three. In order to do that, they have to win out this week. Road game tonight against Grand, home contest on Friday against San Juan, and hope that South Sevier drops two games. We'll talk to Coach Todd Jeffs about that scenario and more right now. Coach, it's always a pleasure to get you on the show. Thank you.
Hey, thank you for having me on.
Absolutely, Coach. We got a fun one to talk about. Last Friday, North Stampede at home. It was a very important contest, just considering the way that the previous two games had gone, Coach. And I thought the boys really responded well. You guys win each of the four quarters and got a tremendous performance from Kyler Willstead offensively in the process.
Yeah, I was real happy with the way our guys played. You know, kind of a trap game, if you ask me. Sam Pete's a real quality team. How they haven't got a win in our league is beyond me, because they've got some athletes and some guys that can really do some damage. And I thought our guys came out focused and with some intensity and really, you know, kind of set a tone from the start. And Kyler Willstead, like you said, he was huge. He just really got some action inside, and he's a little underrated for us. He's so outsized every night we play, but he really does a great job for us. And then I thought Brody Tuttle with his three-point shooting, you know, showed what I've kind of been expecting from him the whole year. And so I think we're kind of coming together at the right time. You know, it's near the end of the season, and we've got a lot of guys kind of peaking at the right time. And so I think we're going to make a good run here the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with that 100%. I mean, and it's all about playing at the right time, peaking at the right time. And you mentioned Brody Tuttle, 7 3-point shots. He's been off and on all year, Coach. There's stretches where it looks like Brody has kind of broken through that shell, and, you know, he'd have a couple of 20-point games, and then he'd disappear for a couple of games, and then he comes back. I don't think it's any secret this offense is most efficient when he's firing.
Oh, no, there's no doubt about it, you know, and teams have such a handful to guard with Braxton Kyson and their ability to get to the basket. And he and Cade kind of benefit from that. I think, you know, Cade's such an explosive three-point shooter and so noticeable. He's just got such a pretty stroke and such a dead-eye three-point shooter that defenses really, you know, kind of concentrate on stopping our penetration and then concentrate on stopping Cade. Brody is a big benefactor of all that. He kind of finds himself in a lot of good situations where he can catch and shoot, and he's such a good shooter that we're just, you know, real happy that he's coming on at the right time.
And we talked to Kyler following the victory on Friday, and he's such a nice, humbled, quiet kid. He just said, yeah, I just went out and played. But, Coach, it sure seemed like he was a little bit more assertive offensively. He looked much more comfortable on that side of the ball.
Well, he really did, and, you know, we don't post him up a lot. Everything he gets, he gets catching, catching what he's facing the basket, and he's on the move. And some of those catches and finishes that he makes they look easy, but they're really tough when you got to catch and shoot all in the same motion. And he has to do that because, like I said, he's so outsized night in and night out, but he's so quick and such a great athlete, and it's so fun to watch him run. I don't think anything pleases me more than to watch him get out on a fast break and get out on that wing, because he can just really fly. And, you know, just glad he's a junior. We got him back for another year, and he's just such a hard-nosed player that he really sets the tone for us, you know, defensively especially. And then when he has an offensive night like that, it just kind of rounds everything out for us.
You mentioned him getting out and running. One of the big differences I can see, it seems like he's found a way to play within his body. I mean, keep control of his speed. Last year, at times, he was a little erratic. That wasn't the case at all on Friday, Coach. I mean, I thought he just played a perfect game on that side of the ball.
He really did, you know, and to be able to catch and finish on that same motion, it, you know, like I said, it looks easy, but it's really a tough move, especially for a high school kid to develop that kind of timing. And he and Brax have played together so long that they have a good chemistry. And he comes off that baseline, and Brax finds him, you know, in motion towards the basket, and it's almost unstoppable. I mean, you know, the ball's in the basket before defenses have a chance to react to it, and so it's a nice component to our offense as well.
Kyson was good on Friday, Coach, but he didn't go off for 40 like he has so far this season, and you guys still found a win. Is that important for a mindset to say, okay, Kyson doesn't have to score 40, at least for the guys on the team, to know that they can still get wins if they spread the ball around?
Well, I think you're exactly right, but, you know, I also think that, you know, it's a compliment to Kyson because I didn't, you know, sometimes you get a high school kid that is scoring a lot of points night in and night out, and then things don't necessarily come his way, and there's a tendency to try to force things that aren't there, you know, just to get his points. And I didn't see that out of Kyson at all. You know, he's a real mature basketball player and kind of takes what comes his way and doesn't force things that aren't there, very willing to pass. And, you know, just when a kid's scoring, like, he's able to score, and then to be able to complement it with being a playmaker and being content with his, you know, lesser points, as long as we're successful as a team, that's a big compliment to Kyson.
Again, we're being joined right now by Coach Todd Jeffs of the Emory Spartan Boys basketball team. Coach, we'll look ahead to the final week of the regular season. It begins tonight against the Grand Red Devils on the road, final road game of the season. Looking at the standings, I know you got to take it one game at a time as we go over the final two. But if we scoreboard watch, there's a chance to climb up to the number three spot in the region. And in talking to you last week, you said that's the focus. We now have to finish as high as we possibly can. Number three is still realistic.
It really is. You know, it's kind of fun to speculate and see, you know, what the different scenarios are. Our most realistic and best scenario right now is to win these two games this week at Grand and then San Juan here on Friday, and then have South Sevier lose both of theirs. They play Manti tonight and then at Richfield on Friday. And so if that happens, we can end up in a tie with South Sevier for third. It'd go to a coin flip to that third and fourth spot. You know, on the other side of it, if we lose both of them, we could drop clear down to sixth, or, you know, depending on what other teams do. So there's so much to be decided here with basically two games left in our league play. And our league's so tough and so strong. And, you know, we're going to go to Moab tonight and play Grand down there. And that's just a very tough atmosphere to play in. And, you know, I think our guys are up to the challenge tonight. We feel good about where we're at and go down and try to get a win.
We'll talk about the first meeting between Emory and Grand, Coach. And it was Cameron Hoppenstead that really pushed the Grand offense. He had 30 points in that contest. Outside of that, they didn't shoot the ball particularly well from beyond the arc. I think they only had four makes, if memory serves me right. What stood out to you the first go-around with Grand?
Well, exactly what you said. Hoppenstead's a great athlete. Phenomenal offensive rebounder. You know, he crashes that offensive rebound from the 15-foot area, and he's got a great nose for the ball. And I thought their guard play here was a little suspect. The Park twins are very capable athletes, and they can just, you know, they're streak shooters, and they can go off at any minute. And they didn't shoot the ball very well here, but we've seen them over the years. You know, they've been a big part of their varsity now for 3 years, and so, you know, we've seen them just kind of go off at different times, and we've got to really do everything we can to not let them get ignited. And in their own gym and in their own atmosphere with their senior night, I know they're going to be up to the task, and we got to challenge every shot, make sure they're shooting overhand, and then get rebounds, and that's our big focus.
When you look at Hoppenstead, Coach, and there's several different looks you guys have thrown out defensively, how important is it tonight for Kyler to make sure he stays out of foul trouble?
Well, I think that's always important, you know, and he's such an aggressive player that we're going to find him in foul trouble quite often. You know, I think Justin Rasmussen's been coming on, and then we've been using Rance Jensen in that spot a little bit too, and they're both capable of backing him up. But Kyler gives you so much on both ends of the floor that we got to keep him, you know, on the floor as much as we can and try to keep him out of foul trouble. And we're going to, you know, kind of mix things up and throw some different defenses at Grand and try to keep them off balance that way. And that'll help, you know, Kyler out a lot too, because he won't be necessarily facing Hoppenstedt every trip down the floor, and so that should kind of help things out as well.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Coach, but with all the different looks that you guys have thrown at teams this year defensively, I don't know that we've met a team that's more capable of breaking down a 2-3 extended zone than Grand, just because Hoppenstedt is so effective out of the high post.
Well, he is, and it's a tough guard, you know. And not only does he, you know, hit that 15-foot jump shot really well, he rebounds as well as anybody we've played in the last few years from that 15-foot area. He really attacks that rebound. He's got a great nose for the ball. And so, you know, we're going to try to, like I said, through our schemes, try to mix things up a little bit and give them different looks, so hopefully we can catch them off balance offensively and try to make them attack in ways that they're not used to attacking and take them out of the comfort zone a little bit. You know, we're not a lockdown defensive team. I mean, you've seen that. We give up a lot of points. Fortunately, we've been able to score a lot of points on the other end, but we got to do a better job of making it tough on teams, and we haven't done that really consistently yet. There's been spots in games where I've been really happy and thought, hey, we're turning the corner and becoming a pretty good defensive team, and then there's times when it's just like a free-for-all for the basket, and all we want to do is outscore people. And, you know, coming down the wire here to the state tournament, the last week of league play here, we got to do a much better job on that end of the floor.
Yeah, you mentioned the defense, Coach, and I know that's been a big point of emphasis. Since that 105-point outburst that San Juan had in the middle of January, the team has been better defensively. I mean, Manti scored 85, but that was also an extra period. We went into overtime. So assessing where you guys are at defensively, are you comfortable with where they're at right now as a team?
Not really. I you know, like you said, we're better, and I feel like we're improving day to day, but I'm not real happy with where we're at. You know, I don't know if it's fatigue or just a lack of focus or what it is, but there's stretches in the game where we just give up layups. You know, we don't even try to move our feet and stay in front of people. We just let people blow by us, and we can't do that. You know, you can't give those kind of opportunities up to anybody, especially when you get into the state tournament and you're playing for everything that's on the line. And so, you know, that's a big emphasis for us every day in practice, and I feel like we are improving. We still got a long ways to go, but you know, our guys are more focused towards that end anyway.
Coach, it's always fun to get you on and talk a little bit about the team. Best of luck tonight against Grand, and we'll see you at the game.
Sure enough, I can't wait to get down there. It's exciting to see how your guys are going to step up to a challenge like this, and so I'm excited to get down there and take a look at it.
No doubt. We've had some epic games over the last couple of years in Moab.
Really have. Just, you know, back and forth games, and it always seems like it's such a physical and high intense atmosphere, and I don't expect anything less than that tonight.
Definitely. Coach, thank you again.
Thank you, Jordan.
Again, Emory Sport and Basketball Coach Todd Jeffs talking about tonight's contest. Emory on the road to take on the Grand Red Devils. Live coverage will begin at 6:30 p.m. Tip-off is scheduled for 7. We've got a break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. It's right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 a.m.
Hey, this is Nick Tropiano with the Anaheim Angels, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
Back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 a.m. Counting down the days to baseball now, because all we have is the NBA with the NFL being over. So we're counting down the days for the start of the Major League Baseball season. I love baseball, but I'm getting annoyed with the possible rule changes. And anytime I come on Drive Time Sports and I start to complain about rule changes, I have to remind myself that I'm the demographic that's going to watch regardless. It's kind of like the Super Bowl. I hate the halftime Super Bowl show. I hate it. I hate the fact that the biggest game of the year has no analysis at the end of the first half. None. I hate the fact that we have an extended halftime when we have played an entire football season, 19, 20 weeks, where halftime is the exact same. I hate the fact that after the halftime show, the first 3 to 4 minutes of the second half of the Super Bowl, it's foggy. Because all the smoke and the pyro that goes off during the halftime show, I hate that. But I also understand that that's not geared towards me. That is geared to bring in another demographic for the biggest football game of the year. I'm going to watch regardless. I didn't even watch the halftime show this year. I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. I didn't even watch it. Halftime, that's my chance to get up, maybe go grab something to eat, fix me a plate, go to the bathroom, whatever. I didn't even watch the halftime show. I'm going to watch regardless. So I understand that things are brought in to target a different demographic. I think it goes beyond that with baseball, but before I dive into that, let me go over some of the designated rule changes that are being discussed as we speak. A 3-batter minimum for pitchers, a universal designated hitter, a single trade deadline before the All-Star break, a 20-second pitch clock, the expansion of rosters to 26 men with a 12-pitcher maximum, draft advantages for winning teams and penalties for losing teams, a study to lower the mound, and a rule that would allow 2-sport amateurs to sign major league contracts. Okay, those are some of the rule changes that are being discussed as we speak. Now, I've always been of the mindset, if you don't like baseball, don't watch. People that complain to me that the games are too long, there's too many pitching changes, they hate the fact that the pitcher will stand there, stare down the catcher, and then he steps off the mound and throws over to first base. If you don't like it, don't watch it. That's always been my mindset. I think the proposed rule changes go beyond the attention span of millennials. And yes, I use the word millennials. There's a reason why we have an overabundance of timeouts during games like the Super Bowl, and it's because of huge money makers with very large viewership numbers. You have more frequent commercial breaks. TV contracts drive most. I mean, I can say they drive everything because I don't believe they drive everything, but they drive most. They say speed up the game so people don't change the channel. That's what they're saying. I relate that directly to the attention span of the human race today in watching the game of baseball. If you don't want to watch innings 1 through 9, don't. This is where TV deals are coming into play, though. Baseball is not long. It's perceived that way. Average games are much shorter than the NFL and NCAA football. And they tried to tinker with the NCAA years ago. They tried to tinker with the way the clock would run. I hated it. Okay, so let me give you my opinion on the proposed rule changes. A 3-batter minimum for pitchers. I hate that rule. That's part of the strategy. And to me, a 3-batter minimum for pitchers works hand in hand with the expansion of rosters to 26 men with a 12-pitcher maximum. That's part of the strategy of baseball. And in the postseason, you have certain matchups that just work. And it's such a big part of postseason baseball, I don't ever want to see that go away. Right? Everybody loves the DH. If you're an American League guy, you love the DH. I hate the DH, but if you're an American League guy, you like it. It has created a specialized line of work. And again, it goes back to the mindset that I was talking about with the Super Bowl. People said the Super Bowl was boring. It was not boring. It was 3-3 with 10 minutes to play in the ball game. It was a 1-score game. When you can make multiple pitching changes, it benefits the defense. And people don't like that today. You could put that in. It does not matter. Any sport, any of the 3 major sports, why is traveling not called as frequently as it should in the NBA? Because it benefits the offense if it's not called. That's why James Harden, who has played magnificent over the last couple of weeks, gets away with taking 3 or 4 steps. It benefits the offense. That's what people love. They love seeing James Harden drop 40. Why can't you hit a defenseless receiver? Well, you can't hit a defenseless receiver because if you do, I guess it's a safety violation, but at the same time, the percentage he has of catching that ball drops drastically. It benefits the offense. Every rule that's been put in football is beneficial to offense, right? You kick the ball out of the back of the end zone on kickoffs, or if you take a touchback, you get the ball at the 25. That's beneficial to the offense. You get it at the 25 instead of the 20. That 5 yards is a big difference, right? So the 3-batter minimum for pitchers, that is an absolute nod to the offense. A universal designated hitter. Hate it. Once again, it's a nod to offense. I've always thought if you play in the field, you should bat. And unless you're 55 or older, you have no idea of what the world was like without a designated hitter. And while I'm not for the DH, I love the fact that the National League doesn't have it and the AL does have it, because again, from a strategic matchup in the World Series, that's fascinating, right? I think eventually pitchers will no longer bat. I will say this, the National League is at a disadvantage when it comes to free agents. Because say you have a free agent, you're in the National League, and you have a free agent that is definitely slowed in the field, he's 34, 35 years old, you don't know if you want to bring him back. The reason you don't know if you want to bring him back is because you can't really dish out the money to pay a pinch hitter that's going to play situational baseball, right? Because front offices are cheap nowadays. There's a place for him in the American League. Shohei Ohtani went to the American League so he could play every day. So he could be a pitcher and he could DH. One of the things that I absolutely hate is that the double switch will die if, in fact, we see the DH take over Major League Baseball. There's also going to be more home runs and a slot in the lineup for marquee players who would just take the day off altogether. Therefore, that is another rule put in place to benefit offense. A 20-second pitch clock. Does this really matter? Does it really speed up the game that much? I mean, you can't expect any pitcher to catch and release the baseball. I saw this stat on the USA Today. I thought it was interesting. 336 pitchers who threw at least 50 innings last season, just three averaged less than 20 seconds per pitch. At the very middle of that group, the average was 24 seconds. So you're shaving off 4 seconds per pitch on average. Can you really expect a pitcher in today's game, throw out like Clayton Kershaw, Madison Bumgarner, Max Scherzer? I'm going with National League pitchers here. I'm just throwing them out to you. These are some of the best in the game. Can you expect them to shave off those 4 seconds and not detract from what they do? And is it really going to benefit the batter? Absolutely, because the pitcher has to change his routine. Again, it's a rule put in to benefit offense. I could go over every one of these rules, and I'm telling you, every single rule change that is being proposed right now in Major League Baseball is to protect offense, because that's what we want to see. And I don't know that I can necessarily blame baseball. I don't know that I can say that, because we view defense as sluggish. We just don't appreciate good defense. And I think a lot of the reason why people don't gravitate towards baseball, it's a special fan. I'm not saying you're right or wrong for not watching baseball. I love it. But it does take a special fan. You have to understand the strategy, the nuances of the game, because a lot of the stuff that happens, I mean, in basketball, you make a substitution, that guy's tired, send him in. I mean, that's simple to understand, right? It's a little bit more difficult if you're just a casual fan of the game to understand that a manager is making a pitching swap because the current pitcher is a left-hander and the current batter bats 300 against righties and a .190 against left-handed pitchers. I mean, a casual fan's not going to pick that up. I still think in basketball, you get praised for offense and defensive subs late in the game. I still think that exists. I still think that, you know, we praise the fact that towards the end of the game, when you're fouling, trying to get back into the game, that you're going to make constant subs. And it is a little bit different in basketball, because a pitcher is going to take 7 to 8 pitches to warm up in baseball. That's not the case in basketball. You come right in, boom, you're in the game. It's the same in football. But I don't think there's any doubt that as far as the rule changes itself for the game, that they are to benefit the offense. Now, I'll tell you what I do like, the proposed rule changes. One trade deadline before the All-Star break. That's perfect. One trade deadline. None of this waiver deadline stuff. One trade deadline before the All-Star break. I think that's fantastic, and I think that would add intrigue to the game. Like, we're talking about NBA basketball right now because we're on the eve of the trade deadline. Baseball, you can still maneuver some things once you get past the initial deadline with the, you know, the non-waiver deadline and everything. So I like that. Draft advantages for winning teams and penalties for losing teams. I don't think it's more evident in any sport, because the NBA has a lottery system. You can tank, but you are not guaranteed to get the number one pick. I don't believe there's a problem with tanking in the NFL. I do believe there's a problem with tanking in Major League Baseball. And a lot of that has to do with the luxury tax and the current CBA, and I know that there's some conversations going on there as well, but I don't hate that idea. you win. You want to own a baseball team, spend the money, and win. I like that idea. So there are a couple of things that I like that they would change about the game in general. But everything that involves the actual game itself on field, it's geared towards helping the offense once again. And I'm just not for it. If you're a defensive guy, I know you're right. You agree with everything I just said, because everything in sports today is geared towards offense. We've got a break one last time. We'll come back, put the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports. It's right here on KOAL, 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Hey, this is Stephen Curry from the Golden State Warriors, number 30. You listen to Drive Time Sports on KOAL, 750 AM.
We're back to put the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports. Fun show today. We got to talk some local basketball, got to talk a little Major League Baseball. More of that will come in the very near future. Again, now it's just NBA basketball. That's it, as far as the national sports scene goes. We will talk a lot more NBA tomorrow, because the trade deadline is upon us and there are some big names. And again, you have to watch the Utah Jazz right now. Are the Jazz going to make a move? I think they have to between now and tomorrow. And so that'll be something to watch. According to reports, Utah's final offer to Memphis for Mike Conley, and this is according to Tony Jones of The Athletic, a first-round pick, a second-round pick, expiring deals dollar for dollar. The Grizzlies wanted Dante Exum, and the Jazz said no. So the infatuation with Dante Exum continues. I'm giving up on the guy. Really, I am. I'd move on from Dante. If it means I'm going to net Mike Conley, I'm moving on from Dante. Coming up tonight, Emory High School basketball right here. Live coverage will begin at 6:30 p.m. Tip-off will follow at 7. The Carbon Dino Boys basketball team will be on our sister station, KRPX 95.3 The Peak. Again, 6:30. Landon Ziesel service pregame show tip-off at 7. I want to thank Coach Todd Jeffs for taking out the time to join us. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. Be safe. We are out.